You ask for it, you get it. Who are we to stop this good vibe? How can you have a frown on your face as we record this post-game Sunday? Meisel on the scene. Nice backdrop.
Seagulls circling.
Doesn't look quite as ominous as last time you did this. I see them, but they're not swooping.
They're hunting. They're planning. They're stalking.
Much like Josh Naylor. I was on that at bat. You know, you'd ask me, I don't remember how long ago it was, you said, well, how do you pitch Josh Naylor right now? And I said, you don't. You don't pitch to Josh Naylor. That's how you defuse the situation. Well, Oakland did pitch to Josh Naylor. Didn't have a choice. I mean, technically, I guess they had a choice. But they opted to on Sunday, and he made them pay by clearing the bases. But this is after they saw this guy take his own bat and bash himself in the head before spiking it. And you're going to give that guy a pitch to hit?
Remember when we were having conversations a year and a half ago about whether this guy was a platoon player, whether he was worth keeping around for the long haul, because how valuable is a part-time first baseman? Silly idiots. Guy's like the best hitter in the league. Shows what we know.
Not a lot, clearly. 16-6. That's your Cleveland Guardians. 3-game lead in the division has been opened up. More on the Minnesota Twins. Don't know if I should say that too loud. Force the cope to begin. Well, continue in Minnesota. A plus 52 run differential? Plus 52? And it, looking at just, yeah, of course, they've played Chicago. They've played Oakland. And I've seen that on Twitter.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Do you know what Oakland's record is? What their winning percentage is against teams that are not the Guardians?
It's like slightly under 500?
That's a 500 club, my friend.
I better hit the music again. But they still have taken 8 of the 10 games they've played against those teams and slaughtered quite a few of those games. Not even close. It's not like one-run squeakers every single night. It's not as if every game is decided by a bad fielding mistake, though some of them have been. To the Guardians' credit, they've capitalized. They're doing this without their ace. They're doing this without Jose Ramirez really being this MVP caliber player. They're doing this without Tristan McKenzie pitching like the guy he was 2 years ago, prior to having arm issues that we're all worried about and monitoring his velocity every single outing. They're doing this without Trevor Stephan, their setup man.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that guy? Or James Karinchak? Can I throw him in here just to make it seem like they've overcome more? They're
James
doing it without
Karinchak.
James Karinchak. Hunter Gaddis is your eighth inning guy. And he looks the part. Dude looks phenomenal in that role that's seemingly made for him. I mean, so much has gone right, yes, but this is all to the Guardians' credit. They deserve the flowers.
They do. This has been, you know, I wrote a piece that I don't know if it's up on The Athletic by the time you'll hear this or not, but it talks about just that. There is not one secret ingredient. There is not one player, two players who have fueled this. They have gotten contributions from every iota of the 26-man roster, and there's a lot of room to grow. The top four in the lineup's been great. After that, it's just a hit here, a good game here. Hey, today was Brennan's day. Hey, this was Floreal's day. Hey, Laureano had a couple of walks this day. It's not like this is some juggernaut offense, and yet they're averaging almost 6 runs a game because they're squeezing every last drop out of production that they can. because it's a different guy every night. Because their pitching has been, the starting pitching has been just good enough, and the bullpen has been incredible. And so it's, yeah, they deserve flowers. I don't, what can you say? The argument against this team would be there's still 140 games left. Okay, there'd be 140 games left if they started 7-15. And then you'd say, oh my God, there's 140 games left. But it's not just, hey, it's a nice start. They're, you know, 12-10. This is, last year's team never won 16 of 22, never sniffed anything like that. So there's a lot to dive into, I think. But it's, you know, it feels like there are a lot of players that could be better, or intriguing players who could come help them. Players returning from injury. I mean, there's room to grow. That's what's crazy.
Yeah, you're right. Now, on, you know, if you want to turn this around the other way, you could say, well, maybe this is just who they are, and they're playing over their heads now, and they're not going to get this other stuff that makes it a more complete puzzle. You could always say, well, there's another gear. Every team feels like, oh, there's another gear. Some teams never reach that. But I want to spin this in a positive direction, because they've earned that through their play. And whether or not they've had Oakland and Chicago on their schedule, which they can't help, they also played 13 games away before this most recent homestand begun, and they started 10-3 on the road. That includes a trip to Boston, taking 3 of 4 against the Red Sox. I don't care if it's juggernaut Red Sox or even just mildly okay Red Sox with a decent rotation, still going to Boston, taking 3 out of 4, is difficult. You went to Seattle early in the season. You took 2 out of 3 from them, right? You played Minnesota, and Minnesota's like, hey, well, they've played Chicago, and they've played, well, they played Minnesota. They took both of those games, too. They've opened up an 8-game lead on the Twins. And I really only bring it up because, like, there's this other side of the argument. I don't think this early into the calendar, it doesn't matter to me. The Twins season isn't over, and the Guardians haven't claimed anything. No. This part in the schedule has nothing to do with that. But it's like, when I get this thrown in my face on social media, trying to take away from what Cleveland has done, no. Two things can be this very true at the same time. One, it's too early to decide what anybody is at this point in the schedule, but Cleveland deserves credit for starting 16-6, regardless of who it's been against, and also the plus 52 run differential. Again, they're not just squeaking by in these games. In some cases, they're just knocking them dead.
Only once in the 124-year history of this franchise has a team started better than the 16-6 that they are right now. And by the way, of the 4 other times when they started 16-6, the 2 World Series teams are included in that.
Okay.
So,
all right, yeah.
Hit the music.
This was the number one song in 1948.
The one year, what was her name? Margaret, whatever the heck, who was like the top singer at the time.
Oh.
Whiting?
Whitting? I don't remember.
I think she went by Maggie, though. I called her Mags. But yeah, the only time they've started better is 1966, and that year they finished 81-81. That's entirely possible. That can happen. No one, I mean, you and I are not trying to say that, hey, because they started 16-6 means screw all your preseason predictions. They're winning 110 games. No.
Your preseason predictions and my preseason predictions. Throw all that garbage out the window.
What it means is that they at least have the ceiling to do this for 22 games. And you can't take it away from them. They were going to play Oakland and Chicago at some point. Everyone is going to. So what do you want? You're going to criticize them because of their light schedule? But if they would have gone, they would have played poorly against those teams, you'd be criticizing them. They've done what they're supposed to do, and then some. And nobody expected them to be able to do this. You think when Oakland started the season against the Guardians, they were like, oh no, the big bad Guardians. No, they were like, hey, these are probably some winnable games. This is a team that's not projected to be a playoff team. So you have exceeded expectations, and I think in that clubhouse, what you've done is you've, at least for a month, confirmed suspicions that maybe 2023 was the fluke year, not 2022. And I think that's important because we've talked about this. You have an idea of what team you are going into a season, but you never truly know. 2016, that team, that opening day lineup was miserable. You had Marlon Byrd and Colin Cowgill, Juan Uribe. You think that that Chris Antonetti thought on opening day that year, like, yeah, we're probably going to trade for Andrew Miller and run to the World Series? No, you don't know. But what you can do is you get off to a really good start and you build confidence and you win in different ways and you form habits and you get guys contributing so that Will Brennan has the confidence that, hey, he's got a pinch hit in a big situation. Well, he's hit a home run in this situation before. You start developing things like that and you don't know where the season can take you. That's what they're doing right now. So it took a 14-game winning streak in 2016 to get to that point. You know, I'm not going to predict what they're going to do in July now. There's a lot of time left. But you couldn't have scripted a better start for a new regime, for a team that got a reality check last year and needed to come into this season proving themselves. And so far they've done as good of a job of that as anyone could have envisioned.
That nailer at bat that spread out the game, you win 6-2 this afternoon. I looked at it sort of like when you'd have a squash match in wrestling, whether you go back to Goldberg or recent day, whoever they're trying to make the monster comes in and just beats someone to hell, just totally destroys them. It's not a match, it's an embarrassment. And it's, if they're trying to make that guy a heel, then it's some local hero, some local guy that's been in gyms, and hey, and he's really scrawny, but everyone there at that local event realizes who this is, and then this guy comes in and just knocks him dead. That was, to me, Josh Naylor against the Athletics, because it felt like they had built a little momentum, like, hey, he had knocked down the monster. He had delivered a clothesline. Everyone's like, oh my gosh. And that was the Athletics in this game, where they had built up a little bit of a comeback. You thought maybe they were building some momentum to steal a game on Sunday, doing the opposite of the 2023 script, so we can't come on here and play the club music. And Josh Naylor was like, no, you know what? Here's an F5. Here's a stunner. You're done. Good night.
But first, TJ McFarland got him down 0-2, I think, and he made him chase at a pitch Naylor couldn't hold up, a pitch way out of the zone. It looked ugly. How many times have we seen Naylor do that too, where he chases something, looks completely lost, and then one or two pitches later he whacks one off the wall or into the seats? It's Kwan, it's Jimenez, it's Jose Ramirez, but he hasn't even gotten going, and it's Naylor, and it's those guys in the parts of their careers where there's evidence of them being good. There's evidence of them being good for stretches that aren't long enough where you're 100% convinced that they're going to be a really good hitter for a long time. And now they're doing that. You know what I mean? It's you have success, then you have to make adjustments and you have some failures and you have to learn from them. And that's when you prove you're a legitimate, you know, we talk about guys to dudes. When you say Naylor and Jimenez and Kwan, they're all proving they're dudes. And you might have thought they were, but like with Jimenez, you wanted to see evidence that he's more 2022 than 2023. I think same with Kwan. And with Naylor, it's, you know, he's still, there's not a pitcher on the, you can be a lefty, you can be a junk baller. It doesn't matter anymore. Like, he is a fearsome hitter to face. And again, like, he's facing a lefty. He has a terrible-looking swing. Like, that is not supposed to be in a bat where he delivers a three-run double to blow a game open. He wouldn't have done that 2 years ago. And give him credit for all the hard work he's put in and becoming a guy you need in the lineup every single day, not the part-time player like DJ Zuppi predicted he'd be.
Yeah, that was me. Totally. I mean, have you looked at Naylor's baseball savant page anytime recently, just for fun, just to check to make sure the red on your screen still works? Because if that goes out, it's going to look like a blank page to you. But my God, before entering today, 95th percentile in expected weighted on base average, 97th percentile in expected batting average, 95th percentile in expected slugging percentage. Oh, average exit velocity is in the 76th percentile. It's not quite as deep a red as some of the other ones. Barrels, 13.8%. He's in the 85th percentile. He's hitting the ball hard. He's finding the sweet spot. He's not striking out. Walking, okay. Yeah, I'll take 9.4% walks when he's being as aggressive and wanting to hit as much as he is. My goodness, we often ask, is there another level for a guy? Can he get better from here? I don't know if this is fully formed Josh Naylor. I hate to ever say that about a guy, that this is his final form and declare that he's reached his ceiling, but has he? I mean, can he even improve off of this? Because this is even more than best case scenario what I thought when they acquired a guy like this that he could ever be.
But that's the whole point of why the team never places ceilings on players and why it's hard. I mean, this is a team full of 25-year-olds, 26-year-olds who we don't know. You're watching them develop on the fly. And again, you gain confidence when you have success. And then I think sometimes maybe you believe, you always believe in yourself, but you get that evidence that proves, oh, so like it was worth it this whole time to believe in myself. It's just, you have building blocks. I think add Kyle Manzardo at some point here soon.
And oh yeah, we'll talk about that.
If you can figure out the shortstop thing, like there's reason this offense can be sustainable. I think you've seen better quality of contact from Tyler Freeman than maybe the surface level numbers themselves show. Can you get some consistency out of any of those outfielders? Like there are building blocks here, I think, finally. And the fact that they're able to stack all of these wins without having the offense humming along 1-9, it's impressive. And it's also give credit to the manager because he's pulling the right levers. He's playing the right guys on the right days, giving guys rest when it makes sense, making sure no one gets too rusty, and giving guys a chance to get hot. And you know, it's worked.
You had teased that there's something different about this year, at least according to the gentleman you spoke to before this game, who has been red hot himself. I mean, your prediction about him leading the league in hits looks pretty good right now. Stephen Kwan has been phenomenal. Can't ask for anything more at the top of the lineup. It does look different from the outside, but from someone that's inside, what makes this different than that season we all want to forget?
Yeah, it's interesting because I've been asking guys, you know, you're 14-6. How? You're 15-6. Is that crazy to you? You're 16-6. How is this happening? And you get the cliches. Well, we all are pulling for each other. We all are, we want the same things. We're hungry, etc. But I finally hit on something and I said, did you need that reality check? Did you need to get hit in the face? Did you need to fail to have the perspective to figure out how to move forward and what to do? Sometimes you have to know what doesn't work to know what does work. And 2022 was such a fever dream. You know, remember, they were a middling team for much of that season. Then they really caught fire in August and September. And they were so young, and we kept saying, they don't know what they don't know and all that. So Kwan admitted, like, last year, I think guys got complacent. They didn't have the leadership they needed. He praised Austin Hedges. Everybody praises Austin Hedges. But I knew it. But it is, you know, Kwan said, basically, Hedges is the loudest voice in the room, and he's not afraid to say stupid stuff. And it makes everybody else feel comfortable because you can say something stupid, but it's not going to be as stupid as what Austin Hedges says. So it was his way of giving credit to Hedges for letting everybody feel comfortable and being able to feel like they can be themselves. I don't know. It's easy to say, like, all those cliche things, those trite things we hear all the time, like the teamwork and all the work ethic and all that stuff. Like, that stuff, it's easy to, like, make it seem like, whoa, this is so revelatory. This is real when you're winning. You're not going to have, like, the White Sox are 3-18, and they're not going to be like, well, we have great teamwork and we're working really hard. And, like, you know, if we didn't have all this, we'd be -2-23. No, like, this is the stuff you say because it, you know, people will be like, oh, like, look at this team. Like, they love each other. Like, yes, of course. You're winning games. It goes hand in hand. But I do think there's something to be said about last year not going well and it having ramifications. I mean, the two guys who your marquee signings in the offseason didn't make it to the trade deadline. And Aaron Civale is not on this team anymore. And you had to recalibrate. And, like, there were consequences. Your manager retired. So it's I think there was some hunger. There was some recognition that we need to change some things. Everybody showing up to camp as early as they did is not a coincidence. And you have a lot of guys who are the same age, who are fighting for the same opportunities, who are trying to prove themselves. And there are healthy ways to go about that, and there are unhealthy ways. And I think there is a good, healthy competition here. And I think you have guys stepping into leadership roles. I think it's Kwan. I think it's Naylor. I think it's under the guidance of Hedges. And so this team has handled adversity well. They're smart enough. They've been through both ends of the spectrum now to know that a 16-6 start doesn't guarantee you anything. Again, that 1966 team went 81-81 after starting 17-5, right? So you never know, but I like Hedges. After the Boston series, Hedges said, hey, we can't take our foot off the gas. Like, the A's can be a trap series. They've played everybody else pretty tough. And if you get complacent, if you let your foot off the gas, you can lose 2-3. They almost lost 2-3 to the White Sox at home. So I just think there's a better mindset. And it's a lot of those intangibles that are tough to put your finger on. And you're going to hear the same stuff like, oh, we're one unit and we're pulling from the same end of the rope and all that. And like, okay, that's stuff you say when you're winning because you can't say it when you're losing. But I do think there's just a really healthy spirit about this team. I think you have to tip your cap to the coaching staff for finding a way to cultivate that sort of environment immediately. And again, it's just like Kwan said it. He said, you know, this is all easy to say when you're winning. And we know it's not going to be this easy. So, you know, we'll see where this goes. They're going to have some tougher competition coming up soon. But they've also both bought themselves a little bit of breathing room where, you know, a losing streak or getting swept in a series isn't going to make you, you know, find religion and question the way the world works. But at the same time, you've built confidence, sure. And you know, like, hey, we can win games. We can rattle off a winning streak. So it's just,
yeah.
It's interesting to hear from someone who started in 22. Like, all Stephen Kwan knows is 2022 and 2023. And you see what he can take from those two experiences and apply to the new season.
Yeah, going back to the whole thought of winning 8 of 10 against Oakland and the White Sox, yes, it helps you build up some breathing room, a cushion for when things aren't going extremely well, or the fact that maybe your pitchers aren't getting into the seventh inning catches up to a bullpen. I don't know. There's a lot of guys that have never been in this position in the major leagues before, so I don't know how they're going to react to it. So, one, enjoy the hell out of this run, because with a team like this, you don't know when it's going to end. So play the club music.
Play it. Rub it. Let's go.
Rub it in the faces of anybody that
drop
tells
that
you,
beat.
Ah, don't feel good about this. Go to hell. Play that music. Puff your chest out. Feel good about your Guardians and Cavs having a good weekend.
I mean, hello. When have you ever felt good about this team's standing on April 20, whatever?
No,
never get off to a good start.
Well, just wait till the second half. You know,
wait till the weather
goes.
Warms up. The bats will heat up.
Yes. Yeah. But on
they're
the topic
second
of,
half team.
On the topic of the starting pitching, Tanner Bibee at least giving me more reason to believe in what I already believe, that he's going to right the ship eventually. He's not there yet. But 8 strikeouts, regardless if it's Oakland or whatever, get me into the 6th inning. He gives up the 5 hits, the 2 runs, but you saw some dominance in there. He's on the way. He's on the way to being the guy that I think he's going to be for the entire season. So while there are a lot of question marks, and we're talking about a rotation that's going to be again be coming up, counting on a Lively, probably a Curry again at some point. Gavin Williams, it looks like, is on the way. What is it, a three-inning sim game, so he's close. But Bybee, that's what you're there to do. Help stabilize things. Help me feel better about the direction. Should you be doing that with a second-year starting pitcher? Maybe not, but it says a lot about him that he's already to that point where I'm looking to him. You've got to be that rock for me. You've got to go out and get me into the sixth inning and just give me a chance to win. Post every 5 days. Hey, he did that today. And so, once again, if we're on the topic of giving people their flowers, might not be all of the flowers he'll get later in the year when he gets on one of those nice runs, but this is a good outing. Good outing to get you right where you needed to be and close out this series, get you to next week. Perfectly done.
I think it's all genetics. Shout out to his dad, Scott. We do appreciate
the family connection.
It also helps. They have a couple off days coming up the next two Mondays, so they can sort of get everything in order again after. But that's the other thing. I mean, it's been stitching together the pitching staff one or two days at a time, which is stuff you typically do when you're trying to navigate your way through September in a pennant race, not early and mid-April just trying to get out of the gate. So they've done a great job with that. The other part is they just haven't, you keep noting the run differential, which is hard to wrap your head around, but it means that they also haven't played the one run games we're accustomed to. They haven't had to use Class A four out of every five nights. Like it seems they haven't had to lean on the same seventh and eighth inning guys every night with the game on the line where you can't make a mistake. You can't walk anyone. You can't forget to hold a base runner.
Five blowout wins for this team. They've had six games where it was decided by five or more runs, and they've won five of them. You're so right. That is not how they play, but it takes the pressure. Even if Klausake has to come in and pitch just to stay sharp, it's not the nail biter constantly living on the tightrope.
It's just none of this adds up, right? The rotation, like you would think that there are, I think, better days ahead just because, you know, Bybee will get in a groove. Williams will come back. I think Logan Allen can be a little better too. I think McKenzie can be better, of course. So, and you can figure out if it's Curry, if it's Carrasco, if it's Lively, if it's several of them who help round out your rotation. And maybe you make a trade midseason. Maybe that's what you're targeting. I don't know. Anyway, I think the rotation can be better. I don't know if it's, you know, it's a lot to ask given Bieber's injury, given McKenzie trying to get back to what he was. It's a lot to ask. Like, I don't think the rotation is going to be the strength of the team this year. That would be my guess. I mean, I don't know. But again, if you would have told me how the things have gone for the rotation so far, I don't think I would have predicted that they'd be 16-6. That's the thing. It's like the lineup, they're scoring runs, but it's not like who's playing way above their head. I mean, maybe Naylor a little bit and Kwan a little bit and Arias a little bit, but it's like Bo Naylor hasn't gotten going. Jose hasn't gotten going. I mean, they're 16-6, and it feels like two-thirds of the roster has more to achieve. That's what's incredible about this.
And they're also, with a little bit extra power, as we mentioned a couple of shows ago, they're hitting for the amount of power that this team needs to have success. Because they're not going to lead the league in home runs. That's not the style of offense they're ever going to be, at least not probably for the next several years. And so you just pepper those in. What happens when you get a few more home runs? When Tyler Freeman hits the two-run home run to right field? Now all of a sudden you don't need to string three hits together to score one run. You've put two on the board just courtesy of a well-timed one. And so just introducing that takes a little bit of pressure off of having to just constantly keep the line moving. And then when the line is moving, then you just pile up the runs that way. But just a little bit more power, just a little bit more respectables up and down the lineup. Will Brennan, you know, introducing that. Whether that's going to make them more complete players, I don't know. I'd like to get into Freeman in a few minutes just to kind of look at some of what makes him different starting this year. But it's just that little extra power that makes you more legitimate and enables you to score runs just a tiny bit more easily here.
They need a name. We had Tito's Bloop Troop. What is this? Votes Balanced Brigade?
Yeah, keep workshopping that.
I mean, can you imagine being an opposing pitcher and you're like, oh shit, I gotta face Vogt's balanced brigade? Doesn't that strike fear into you?
Just trying to say it without getting tripped up with my tongue. Freeman, so he's someone like Brennan. Kwan has said he wants to impact the ball more. With Kwan, it's interesting because it hasn't resulted necessarily in more home runs and more power, but maybe just the mentality itself is helping him be more aggressive where he needs to be.
Yep.
I mean, do you have some thoughts on Kwan? That it's not necessarily leading to the home runs. I don't know why I said it that way. The home runs. It's like people that say Taco Bell instead of Taco Bell. But maybe it's just
potential.
There's a deep cut. It's making him a more complete player, even though he's not doing what it intended to do.
Yeah, it's funny because we had talked a few days ago about his strikeouts being up, and it's eating at him because there have been a bunch to lead off a game. And that just
he's never been a better hitter, and he's right. Still looking at those strikeouts.
But so yeah, it's interesting. I mean, he's got two home runs. I think he's only got like two or three doubles, but it's the way he's getting to his hits. It is a more aggressive approach. It is swinging at the first pitch more. It is swinging in general more, and it is getting to a point where a pitcher cannot feel comfortable. And I think same goes for Naylor, who has that chase rate has jumped like crazy, right? So you used to be able to convince Naylor to chase the fastball up or a breaking ball low and away, and he'd chase it. And so even if he's got a good contact rate, but if he makes contact, it's not going to be a good contact. And with Kwan, it was always, he's not going to chase. So you have to come into the strike zone. But you could come into the strike zone because he wasn't going to swing. So just pitchers knowing that he's not going to sit back and necessarily work the count and then wait to get to 3-1 and then try to hit it hard. It's, oh, you're going to try to groove a fastball first pitch? Well, I'm going to whack it. So it's more that, and like the BABIP is high and there will be a trade-off at some point, but his hope is that it's that pitchers don't feel comfortable attacking him in the middle of the strike zone because he's hitting 370 or whatever it is. So they do try to convince him to chase, and he's still, that's his, what he is at heart is someone who's not going to do that. And then you'll see the walks come back up. You'll see the strikeouts go back down. But I think the trade-off is fine. His strikeout rate is still elite, and you'll take that with just the better overall hitting, even if it's not 25 homer potential or 95 mile an hour average exit velocity.
I mean, right now, we haven't had a lot of players to talk about over the past several years that opposing teams need to circle on their whiteboards before the series starts.
No.
And Josh
but
Naylor.
But look out, it's the balanced brigade.
Naylor leading the brigade with his vicious cuts.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm having so much fun watching this guy swing the bat. I mean, for years and years, it was, I love watching Corey Kluber pitch. I love watching Carrasco operate. I love seeing Bauer have this entire giant arsenal and try to work his way through it. And Bieber's precision, oh my God. Right now, when Naylor comes to the plate, it is must-watch entertainment.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you alluded to this earlier, but when you're, like, I remember playing any sport as a kid, And right before the game, you look over at the other team. You're just like sizing them up. You're thinking, all right, who am I going to guard? Or who do I need to watch out for? Who looks like I can throw my junk at them and they'll swing at it? Who's the crazy dude smacking himself in the head with a bat and then spiking it on the ground like Thor's hammer? That's the dude who I'm going to be terrified of, right? You're not doing that if you're going to be someone who hits 180 with six home runs. You're doing that if you want to bruise every baseball that comes your way. So it is a joy to watch him at the moment. And the personality is funny. Because you see this guy on the field, he gets back to the dugout and you're like, who knows what he's going to do or what he's going to yell. I mean, it was amazing watching him go back in the dugout after that home run. And he's screaming at everyone. He's like trying to get everybody riled up. And I'm like, it's April against Oakland. What are you going to be doing if this is a playoff team and you're doing this in the ALCS? It's insane. And I think,
yeah,
that energy is, it is infectious, but it's also hilarious then when he sits down post game and you ask him to run through that. And he is so unenthused. He is so calm, matter of fact.
How can
nonchalant.
He have any energy left?
Hoynesy asked him about it.
The energy bar is just going womp, womp, womp. He's flashing red in the press conference because he's got no life bar left.
And he's just matter of fact, like, yeah, that's just what I did. And Hoynesy asked, did it hurt? And he just shakes his head, kind of mutters, not really. And then there are 8 seconds of silence because no one knows what to do after that. So it's really fascinating. He's such an interesting individual. And it is like he invokes this persona when he goes to the plate. Like he just wants to just destroy.
Yeah, he becomes somebody else.
Well, no, but that's what I said. I said to Stephen Kwan, I said, what is he evolve into? Who does he become? And Kwan said, he becomes Josh Naylor. So what is he? What is the other persona then? Who is that?
It is fun seeing this fully fledged, fully evolved Pokemon, this Charizard. You saw him when he first came here as Charmander. Now he is the fully formed version. We're seeing, like, if this is a Pokemon, we're seeing Stephen Kwan maybe in his second evolution. So you saw the first one. Now he's in his second one. He hasn't fully reached where Naylor is at, where he knows who he is. He knows what he's going to do, and he's going to inflict that damage on everyone else. But it's fun to watch that. And then I see someone like Tyler Freeman, who is still early in his progression of deciding what sort of player he's going to be, what position he was going to play for a long time. He's seemingly found that, at least in the short term in center field. And as a hitter, too. And for so long, we looked at him and said, well, there's a guy that's not going to hit for a lot of power, probably won't walk a ton, but he should hit for a high average. Remember those conversations? Well, right now, he's hitting .217 with a .690 OPS. And so if you would have told me through this point of the season where they're 16-6 and he's got a .690 OPS, I would have said, okay, and with what? Like a .280 average? No. He's doing all of the damage with big, meaningful blast. This is not the guy that we've grown to know. Now, of course, he's 24. He could still just be evolving as a player. But this is never what I intended to see. I don't know if I love it, if it's going to take away from him as being a full player to maybe be this sort of guy, or if he's just kind of, like I said, into this evolution of realizing what he has to be successful, not just this slap-hitting sort of guy that's going to hopefully hit .280 through the BABIP God luck. Looking at his Savant page just tells an interesting story because he's like hovering around where a league average bat would be in expected weighted on base average, sort of similar in expected batting average. That's at .244. And we said a few shows ago, he's hit into some bad luck, particularly early in the season. He had some bad luck, probably should have had some better results. But he's in the 69th percentile, nice, in expected slugging percentage with a .441 right there. And the thing that really jumps off the page for me, not that it's an astronomical number, but because he was never this sort of player, is the 10.6% barrel rate. He's barreling balls more than ever before. The home run he hit to right field actually wasn't a barrel, maybe partially fueled by that new jet stream.
Bloop.
that jet stream. They opened up to right field through taking off the third deck. But he's in the 72nd percentile in barrel percentage. He's in the 83rd percentile in hard hit. He's in the 81st percentile in hit where his sweet spot is. So that's the launch angle. And if you notice, he's getting the ball off the ground a lot this year, really committing himself to being more of a fly ball, not ground ball sort of hitter. And he's at 40% on the ground ball. That's down like 10 to 12% where we've seen him previously. And the fly balls are at 28%, right around there. And before this year, it was like 18%, 16%. Now he's at 28%. So it looks like a guy to me that is really sort of figuring out how to become that hitter, but is having a little bit of extra success. And now to me, because he's added the versatility of center field, and he's still working through maybe adding a bit more power and utilizing the best launch angle for his skill set, he's interesting. I'm not going to run away from him, even if it hasn't always been pretty so far this year. There's a little bit more that I'm hopeful that there's more for him to unlock.
There was a lot of homework for Chris Valleca and company over the winter because they have a bunch of hitters who fit into different buckets, but it's all under the same...
That votes bucket brigade?
No. That's something different.
Oh, wait, my bad.
Yeah. All under the same... faucet? In that the Selvius Godcast, a Cleveland Scene Best Podcast nominee, and probably because of our awesome metaphors and analogies.
I'll accept that fifth place medal right now.
They have a lot of guys who you don't know what the skill set can translate into in the majors. Freeman is so different from Gabriel Arias, but they're both young hitters who have had a little bit of exposure to major league pitching, and it's going to take time to learn what they're actually capable of. But I do think Freeman and Brennan probably fit in the same bucket where it's that contact ability, and it's what does that translate into? Like, Miles Straw can make a lot of contact, but with no power and no real effective strategy for doing much other than harmless singles, the ceiling is really low, right? So what can you do with Freeman's contact ability, with Brennan's contact ability, to turn it into something productive at the major league level? And I wonder if sometimes you need to prove that you can do damage, and maybe that's hit for power, maybe it's hit more fly balls, and then pitchers will pitch you differently, and it allows you to then lean on that contact ability more. You know, we just talked about it with Kwan, where he's trying to change his approach. He talked all offseason about just hitting the ball harder and being more aggressive, and that's working. It's not working. His numbers aren't, aside from just being on base all the time, like his numbers, again, he's not a different hitter. He's not a power hitter, but the approach changes, then the pitchers have to change their approach to you. And so when you are Freeman, when you are Brennan, and you can make a shit ton of contact, that doesn't always matter. Like, you still have to. And pitchers are so good that your 95th percentile contact rate in the minors that's also not going to translate perfectly in the majors too. So I just think you have to maybe succeed in different ways before you can really lean on that contact ability. And I think that's what they're trying to prove. I don't think Tyler Freeman's out there saying, I need to hit more home runs. But if you change your launch angle, if you try to find ways to hit the sweet spot more, then maybe pitchers have to give in to you a little bit. And that's when you can, you know, him taking the ball the other way, that inside out swing just looks so natural. Like, eventually he should be able to do that more. But if that's all you can do, pitchers can prevent you from doing that.
I just find it fun, and I'm sure it's rewarding for coaches when you're working through these changes, and then you can tangibly see some of these things working, and you know behind the scenes they're trying to get to that goal. With Freeman, I'm not even saying that what we're seeing right now should be the final vision for him, and that's fine, and he's going to be a great player just based on that. I don't know that, but he is more interesting today through some of the positional changes and now the hitting changes than he was a month ago for me. And I'm sure for the team, and even maybe for himself as well. But I know he's trying to accomplish the goal of being a more impactful hitter, doing more damage on pitches that he can hopefully change the game with. And you see that in the, it's reflected through the numbers. I can see the whiffs up a little bit, so maybe he is taking more of a chance at times to go chase that ace swing. Is that what is best for him? I think there's some pros and cons to maybe looking at it as a A swing, B swing. There's two sides of that coin. But I just see the results of him working through this. And so to me, it's as I'm looking down in the minor leagues and thinking, I want to see Manzardo at some point. I want to see Rodriguez at some point. And we could just go through the list, and there's another guy down there I won't mention, but of course you want to see him later this year as well.
Schneeman.
There it is. I'm not to a point where Freeman is the guy I would kick to the curb, because you're showing me something that I just want to see some more of, and I want to let this evolution continue for him.
There's only one side of the coin for Josh Naylor, who said his goal is to get his A swing off every time he swings the bat. So all gas, no brakes.
Let's finish on the thought of looking down in the minor league, seeing Manzardo. I'd seen our guy Gage had put, he's leading Columbus with 10 barrels so far. Schneeman's numbers have been incredible, expected numbers. But I think most people are looking at guys like Manzardo, like Rodriguez to this point. And I've seen some of that in our Discord too. And yeah, I think we've all been waiting for the day, at least for Manzardo, to arrive. But if I had to tell you, somebody's got to lose their roster spot right now to make that happen, how do you pick?
It's tough, and this is part of the complication of riding the hot hand when the outfielders haven't really gotten hot. I mean, there are at-bats for Manzardo. Don't get me wrong. I think he should be up here. But whoever you would cut to make space for him, you probably haven't gotten enough of an extended look to feel comfortable in that decision. So, you know, if it's Floreal, are you comfortable after, I mean, he hasn't played a ton. Are you comfortable letting him go now? Do you feel like you've learned all there is to learn after you stuck with him in training, after you made that trade?
No way.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's a good question. You know, the other thing is there's enough versatility on this roster where you could send anybody out. Do you want Rocchio to spend time in Columbus? Well, you can play Gabriel Arias at short. You can move Freeman to short if you need. And that opens up a spot for Manzardo, who can be your DH every day. I mean, there's the good thing is it's not just, you don't just have to take a first baseman type out of the equation to add Manzardo. The bad thing is you haven't really given a ton of run to all these guys. Like, do you want Brennan to have a chance to get hot? Then you probably need more of a look for him, right? So it's tricky. And Freeman has taken so well to center field that, like,
right,
I think that's an option.
Who are to say that the things aren't being juggled magnificently right now? It's working.
No, I know.
It kind of comes back to what you have said many times. It's tough to play the winning card and the development card at
Bingo.
The same time.
Yep. Exactly. And they certainly seem to be playing the winning card really well right now. So it's difficult. I there's not an easy answer here. And I don't know how long of a leash you need to give. And the other part of it is, what's more important to you? Is it Manzardo looks ready right now and he's not gaining anything by being in Columbus still and he can help us? Or is it the order of operations we've talked about, where you need answers on the guys who they're further along in their timeline? Like, what you've talked about it. At what point, you said, you know, if it's Arias or Rocchio and they're just doing okay, at what point do you flip that and give the other guy a chance? Or does it need to be one extreme or the other? I don't know. This is why they pay Steven Vogt the decent bucks.
But that's what complicates it, because it's not just about looking at trying to learn about somebody. Everybody here, to some degree or another, is helping you win games.
Yeah.
Consistently, not always.
I mean, like, but David Fry would last year would have been such an easy answer here, right? But he is playing such a key role and has thrived. How are you? You're not getting rid of him.
God, an angering Twins fans to no extent. Yeah, Fry's not going anywhere. Arias is not going anywhere.
Laureano's making $5 million.
Well, he's the one that maybe at some point later this year.
Yeah.
Because you keep Laureano, he was a very nice insurance policy against left-handed pitching and some against right-handed pitching.
And a veteran and a
yes.
former teammate of the manager.
Yes, all of those things out of the gate makes a ton of sense. But maybe maybe we're in June, maybe we're in July, and that role has been taken over by David Fry. And you could just, in the aggregate of what you have, you don't need a Laureano. But I'm not sure.
They DFA'd Juan Uribe in 2016.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, he had 4 months to mentor Jose Ramirez. That was enough, I guess.
It worked.
No one's heard from him since.
And you brought up Rocchio. You could send him down, plug in Arias as your everyday shortstop, open up a roster spot that way. But at the same time, is that what's best for kind of the way you've played right now? Is it what is best for Rocchio? Certainly not. I wouldn't think. I'm not sure what I'm going to learn from him playing more games at AAA other than just playing more games and you not having to put him on the bench for games here and there during the week. But that's not an easy one. Floreal has come up with some pretty big base hits so far, and I like the power potential off the bench, maybe more. Brennan, you could say, well, maybe it's Brennan, and then Brennan has a day like today where he hits the home run. I mean, where are you going to find that roster spot?
It's funny. They'll say, Steven Vogt's favorite thing to say is, that's a good problem to have. And the difference is, usually, everybody's clamoring for the top prospect at this time of year because the offense is ice cold. And everyone's saying, the bats will warm up when it gets warm, and you call up these seven prospects at AAA. And that's not part of the equation now. You know, Manzardo should be in the majors, but you, for once, have to take into account the other side of the equation. And usually you don't.
Right. And I think at some point the answer will be easy at some point. I'm just saying it's not easy right now. And
how are you going to, okay, same question. June 1st, Juan Brito.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah. Right. Great problem to have. Maybe could he be the ammunition you need to get a starting pitcher?
Mm.
I mean, there is a
could Manzardo?
Well, we
Zardo
already,
for Zardo?
Already brought that up before. I think you're going to get to a point where you're going to need all these guys.
Yeah.
But as opposed to several weeks ago where I was, just do this now, or in the case of Brito, very soon, now I don't feel the rush. And the answer will probably be presented to you very soon. And I can't wait for the minute that they're going to pencil Manzardo into that lineup. But as of right now, you don't need to feel like you have to do it. But that also gives credence to the fact that maybe that's the perfect time, because you're not plugging him in going, okay, I'll come help save this offense, guy. You're bringing him up with the intent of, hey, come hit seventh and eighth and be part of, well, what's it called? I don't
even know. The Vote Balanced Brigade. I mean, you know what this is? This is you're at the club. And it's not that you need to go get that extra drink that sounds good because you need to save your night. Like, you're at the club and you're not really feeling it, but maybe another drink will help. No. You're having a great night. You're 16-6. And the bartender's saying, hey, free drink here if you want it. It's the Manzardo cocktail. Makes a good night even better. It's the analogies. It's the metaphors. That's why people come here.
You don't know how long the party is going to last, but enjoy the party while you're here. Because, yeah, Sunday morning arrives and it's not always the greatest. In this case, Sunday afternoon and evening arrived and the Guardians have swept the Athletics. They're 16-6. Your team is just laying waste to the rest of baseball right now. At least the part of the schedule they've seen.
And they've got an off day on Monday. So shut down that bar. Party on Sunday night.
Thanks for hanging out with us, everybody. Hey, if you're down on YouTube, you see that little button down there, subscribe.
Right below the seagulls.
Yeah. You'd click subscribe down there. Like the video. Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcast. Google has died.
Podbean.
Google Podcast is gone. But find us somewhere else.
Cleveland
YouTube Music, Amazon, any of those places. Come find us there. Come hang out with us. We haven't mentioned in a while, but you can get some money off your tickets, too. SeatGeek. Use code SELBY. He's going to take care of all the homework now before we send everybody home. Anything else?
No. And join us on Patreon later in the week.
Hang out with us in the Discord. Get access.
What will their record be then? 19-6?
By supporting the show. Join the future millions and millions of supporters there. We'll see you. Bye.